Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is opened up for Madison! A thing of beauty! Johnson. Kulusevski!
Hello there, good evening or good evening whenever you're actually listening to this recording. Firstly, I'm sure I'm not the first Spurs podcast host to have made that joke, but it still just feels relevant. Obviously, it's me, expat hosting. I'll be joined by two lovely co-hosts who are just very awake. First of all, Kevin and Nash, how are you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm good. I was vibing out to the intro music because I haven't heard it in a while, so I was like, I got the adrenaline rush and all of that. So if it's flagrant time today, then I apologize in advance.
That's all right. I'll just play it again quick. Tobes, how you doing? Another holiday?
No holiday, man. Even though I did do holiday things, but it was not a holiday. But I'm good, man. I'm good. Tired, but good. Good to be back. And I just want to say as well, yeah, I think like you're actually a really good host. I was listening to last week's pod with you, you Tops, and I can't remember who else. I think it might have just been you and Tops, but like your hosting was just so good. I think like you make a lot of points that are quite funny, and I don't think you're getting your just dues for some of the one-liners you're dropping. You know, it's actually really impressive.
I'm very dry humoured, so that might be why.
Dry in a good way. I was going to make fun of Tobes and sing, hands on your knees, hands on your knees.
Oh, shut up.
But no, thank you. Those are very kind words.
He is good.
So it was a business trip of yours then, Tobes. And obviously, getting into the Aston Villa game, you were very much standing on business and at the game. Atmosphere sounded great. Obviously, all the Spurs fans up for the game. We've been waiting for Aston Villa away for what feels like months now, ever since we had the reverse fixture. How did you feel going into the game? Were you confident, and did you expect the lineup that Ange did put out with just a couple of changes?
On the first question, yeah, man. I was confident, and it wasn't like a confidence that I expected Spurs to go there and blow them away, but it was a confidence that I expected Spurs to go there, be competitive and win this game of football, because it was an important game in the context of our season and getting top four, et cetera, et cetera. And it was an opportunity to play an Aston Villa side who, while they have been, like, I think they've been really, really impressive this season, we ran them close at our ground with half our team missing and should have won that game of football, if not for inconsistent finishing and not maximizing on their high line. And the fact that we had players missing as well. So, like, I felt that we did enough to have won that game of football, but we didn't win that game of football. And then in terms of the team that he selected, I was actually quite shocked that he started Brennan Johnson left wing. I was not mad at it at all. I thought the team was still more than capable of going there and getting 3 points, but I was just shocked because I thought he was going to go with his tried and trusted Werner and at left wing, which he has basically deployed since Werner's basically joined the club. But yeah, that was quite surprising to me. Everything else was pretty predictable. The fullbacks, the midfield, he had to have played that team, in my opinion. But back onto the first question, yeah, man, I was just super confident that we were going to win this game of football, because I believe that when we're at our best and we have our full complement of players available, it's quite clear that we're a better side than Aston Villa.
Yeah, I favoured it. I thought Aston Villa playing in Europe midweek would go against them. I was even saying it on last week's pod as well. I thought Porro being back meant that Werner would probably eat from having passes sprayed from right to left. Romero, obviously, very capable of that as well. And obviously, he didn't start Werner in the end. I was pleasantly surprised to see Brennan Johnson, who I've been giving his dues to. Obviously, we'll get into those performances as well. But yeah, Si, how do you feel like that first half played out, as well as the lineup choice within itself?
Yeah, I think the lineup, the most pleasing thing for me was Sarr starting over Bentancur. I think the last few weeks in particular have shown that Bentancur is not match fit yet, and he's just not up to match sharpness. But players of that quality can be game changers. So having that as an option off the bench and utilising someone who has ultimately been one of the standouts for the whole season in Sarr added additional level of confidence for me. I always feel like Kulusevski is always first name on the team sheet on that right-hand side, if he's available, despite popular belief that he's not been effective this season. So it was quite pleasing to see Brennan in the role that I think he prefers. I feel like he had a field day from the first whistle, to be perfectly honest. Cash couldn't really stay with him. The balance of the team looked a lot better because Brennan was driving with the ball. He was attacking in 1v1 situations, and ultimately it just enabled the rest of the midfield and that right-hand side to just function a little bit better. I think the main disappointment for me wasn't that we weren't able to create, given our dominance. I think we had like 67% possession in the first half, or there and thereabouts. And the most disappointing thing for me was the combination play on the right-hand side. I felt it was quite lackluster, and neither Porro or Kulusevski were getting into rhythm and combining frequently enough to actually create space in other areas of the pitch. But moving into the second half, we obviously saw that change quite drastically.
Yeah, fair. You just touched upon something which I want to get onto just before we talk and move on to the second half and the many, many goals. With Kulusevski being out on the right-hand side, you said that he's one of the first names on the team sheet. Do you think next season we need another profile of a right winger, or are you happy for Kulusevski to continue that role?
Me personally, I'm happy for him to continue that role. I think one of the big misconceptions, I think fans get really hung on, and I don't want to attack anyone, but people get really, really hung up on profiles that they gravitate towards, as opposed to profiles that maybe suit the system. So if you have the same profile on both wings, it means that in the sort of passages of play where things aren't working for you, you're just duplicating the same problem on both sides of the pitch. So having the ability to either switch a guy to a different wing, like if for example, you were to take off Kulusevski and pop Brennan on the right and put a Werner on the left, you still have a element of balance. You still have different capabilities. You have the ability to mix it up. Whereas I feel like Kulusevski's at his best when he's able to get in the mix in the midfield and able to actually like playmake properly. So the expectation for him to be a 1v1 demon is just a little bit unrealistic. That's not his game. But if you see the way that he approached the game later on, those little intricate passes, those little interchanges of position with Porro or Saar in the instance of the goal, they free up so much space. So why would you deprive your team of having that type of attacker just because they don't run at 40 miles per hour down the wing and whip it in like Aaron Lennon? Like, it baffles me. I do think we need depth on that side, but I don't see Kulusevski getting displaced from that side of the pitch. I really don't.
What are your thoughts on that as well, Tobes? Because you've been obviously quite critical of Kulusevski this season, and obviously most of it is quite valid. But yeah, where do you see him kind of playing role-wise for Spurs, obviously going forward long-term?
I think Kulusevski's shown that he's a competent option on the right-hand side. My issue with Kulusevski is I think that we're a team, and Andrew's mentioned it before as well, we're a team where we've essentially like left a lot of goals on the table. And I feel like we sometimes let teams off the hook. And I think one of the biggest culprits for that is Kulusevski. I do agree with Si. I think there's tangible things that he brings to our game, the creativity. I think up until, I would say, maybe January, outside of January or February, where I think he's probably played his worst football in a Spurs shirt this season, I think he's been a constant source of chance creation for Spurs. And you've seen that even in games where he's not even playing that well, he will just come out of nowhere, just pull something out of the mud, bit of combo play or nice key pass or the pre-assist before the assist, or even in some cases, the assist. But in my eyes, I'm thinking, if we want to try and go up a gear, I want someone who can do things at a more consistent rate in terms of like the final third output. And that's not just assists, because assists isn't purely down to Kulusevski. Assists is down to other people taking their chances. And I don't think the numbers reflect like his creativity this season. So as an example, Brennan Johnson has got six Premier League assists. There's no chance Brennan Johnson has been more of a creative outlet for Spurs than Kulusevski this season. Kulusevski's created enough chances to be close, if not on double figures, and assist this season. But I want match winners, guys who can win us a game of football more frequently than Kulusevski can right now. That's what I want on the flanks. And it's not just exclusive to him. I think it's applicable on the other side as well. I think if we can get good signings right, it takes our team up a notch. And I think if we can go from someone like Kulusevski being a guy who's competing for a right-hand spot as opposed to undisputed, with a view to then move into a central position, that's where I think Kulusevski can be at his best for Spurs. Like, if we were able to get to a position where we could use, and I think me and Yao were speaking about this a couple of weeks, but if we can get to a position where we can use Kulusevski the same way Man City use Bernardo Silva, for instance. Like, we know Bernardo Silva can do a job on the right-hand side, but he's super effective in the middle. Do you get what I'm saying? And he dovetails, like, he's good enough that you can plug and play him in multiple positions. He can do his thing. That's the way I see things going, or that's the way I see things could go for Kulusevski.
I think to touch on that, because I've been a big detractor of that, I don't totally disagree. I always have to qualify that, because obviously sometimes we speak on that in absolutes to really, really narrow down our point. But as was put in the chat, statistically, Kulusevski is one of the best chance creators in the league. He has 10 big chances created this season, but he has 3 assists. Per game, he has just shy of or not per game, but over the course of the season, he has an expected assist of just shy of six. So whichever way you cut it, everyone else around him is underproducing. The one statistic that I do think massively goes against Kulusevski is shots per game. He's at like 1.7 per game, which is for one of your front three is unacceptable. That much I do agree. So if we're able to acknowledge the fact that in terms of chance creation, it's not a problem from the wide areas, I don't necessarily see what we gain to like such a high level from moving him in the middle and getting someone else who ultimately won't be, or it's unlikely to be, of a significantly better standard than him on that right-hand side. So unless we're spending 70, 80 mil on like an already established player, then I don't really know if I'm advocating for that to be where we spend the money. But
I think that's what we need. I think that's what we need, you know. Like, I think we need a... And it's annoying because, like, the spend that you're... That, like, we want... Spurs are never going to spend that money, right? But me personally, I think we need, like, a 60, 70 million pound option on the left and the right. I think if we went into next season, right, with a new right winger and a new left winger, and you had the new right winger competing with Kulusevski, and you had a new left winger competing potentially with Brennan Johnson, right? Because all this time I've looked at Brennan Johnson as purely a right winger, but hey, who knows? Maybe he could switch out on the left, right? If we got into a position where we could have that as options next season, I think that makes our squad so much better. Of course, there's two or three other positions I think that needs to be upgraded, but yeah, man, I just think it makes us better. I really do. And I also think Kulusevski, in my opinion, I think his form, like I said, I alluded to, his form is starting to pick up a little bit now, right? But I've not been happy at all with Kulusevski's form in 2024. I think he's put in performances that have just been like way, like you can't be sinking to those lows as a player of your caliber. Like you just can't. Like, and I think that's been my issue with Kulusevski this season. Like, when he's good, he's great. Even when he's average, he can still make some chances. But like when you're not having a great game, why does it have to be so like woefully bad? That's been my issue with Kulusevski in 2024.
And that's fair. Obviously a very popular player as well. And he's just come out with that article and that video from the Players Tribune, a letter to Spurs fans, and referred to himself as a winger several times. One of my takeaways was he does back himself. Like he was saying that a lot of people say he might be too slow or whatever, but I played in two finals for Juventus and ultimately decided one of them. But yeah, like there's been times where he hasn't backed his shooting or backed his right foot. And it's just weird. And so you've been a bit critical of, I guess, Porro and Kulusevski's partnership. I think you get the impression that Kulusevski tends to play better with Emerson. I partly think that's mainly because Emerson just gives him the ball early and then just...
big runs.
Essentially, yeah, he's just a decoy for most of the time. Anyway, he just gives Kulusevski the ball and then acts as a decoy. And that's it. Like, no combination play needed, really. Just lets Kulusevski kind of do his thing. How did you feel that evolved? Or what was your take on it overall, I should say?
Yeah, I think there is some credence to Emerson operating as like a... Almost like Emerson Issa Okoto did with Gareth Bale, where he just got the ball early and often to him and let him sort of cook and got him in areas to a frequency to where... The law of averages says that if you get a ball more, you do more with it, right? But Emerson is also a really underrated like thinker off the ball. Like I haven't seen us have like even on the left hand side, Adoghi puts in so many yards and gets so much of the ball, but can you say that he with any of the players that he's played with on that left side has a combination with them? No. You wouldn't say that. Maybe with Madison, but not with any of the wide players. Whereas Emerson will make overlapping runs. He'll make underlapping runs. He'll dribble with the ball and release the ball late to Kulusevski, or they'll combine in wide areas when we're sort of camped out in the opposition half. Whereas Porro and Kulusevski don't really have any sort of patterns that we can point out. They both play as individuals on that side for 80% of games, and maybe 3 moments per game actually combine with each other in any sort of form of a fluid manner. So I think it's just a case of stylistically, they both look to do very similar things. They both want to be the player that delivers the ball. But we need them to figure it out together. They did it in the second half against Villa, and it was devastating. So as long as they can build that chemistry and actually start to understand each other's tendencies a little bit more, and maybe be a little less selfish. Not to say that they're drastically selfish, but I think there is a level of like ownership that both of them take. As long as they do what's best for the team and choose their moments and assess things in real time, then I think we'll be fine. But they need to figure it out soon. And Villa was one of the first games where I've seen them put it together.
Do we think that there's a it's symptomatic of also maybe what the manager wants out of the team as well? Because I feel like that might play a part in it too. Because I do think they don't have that natural chemistry yet, but they are two like highly technical players. Like I think if you're looking at players in our team that just have pure technical quality, I think you'd look at Kulusevski and Porro as two players on the side. But I think the way that we set up sometimes with Porro doing the inverted thing and maybe not overlapping as much as Emerson would, I don't think it helps them build the chemistry that they're going for. And I think if I compare it to Destiny as well, like Destiny also plays the inverted role, but I feel like with Destiny, I see him in the box a lot more than I see Porro in the box. And I think he combines well with Maddison on that side, where Maddison dovetails on the left-hand side, but on the right-hand side, don't really see that with Pedro Porro.
The only time we ever see it is when Tar plays.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
So Sarr for that right-hand side is pretty much like nailed on for me now. I don't think anyone else makes as many dynamic runs or like breaks into free space as well as he does when he plays on that right-hand side. So I think multiple things are like acting as components. Obviously, we've been fragmented for the whole season. We had Sarr go away on Cup of Nations. We've seen him out of the team when Bentancur's come back in. And we've seen a lot of disruption, but When those three play on that right-hand side, I feel a lot more comfortable. But I definitely think that Porro needs to take some lessons from Udogie and actually start breaking into the box on the inversion as opposed to trying to whip the ball in from wide or from deep like he's trying to compete with Trent highlight reels. But they've got to figure it out.
Yeah.
That Sarr section was a perfect segue. Tobes, talk me through that kind of second half blitz. Obviously, we lost Van de Ven early on in the second half to injury. We welcomed Dragosin, and then we turned it up.
Yeah, man. I think it was like the pressure finally told it, I think. And the first half, you could see that we were dominating possession. I think we did quite well at sort of like forcing Aston Villa to basically move the ball into areas they didn't want to move the ball. And as a result, we were able to capitalize and win the ball back. It's just, I feel like our execution when we were able to reclaim the ball in the first half just wasn't really on point. And we just sort of needed just that little bit of quality just to unlock the door. And once the door, you felt like once the door was unlocked, then we'd be able to do it with a lot more regularity. And I think that's what you saw with the first goal in terms of the quality that I'm talking about. Because Sai's already alluded to Kulusevski. I think Kulusevski, I didn't actually think he was having that good a game, but that's the quality that Kulusevski and Porro possess. Like quick give and go combined, basically take two or three Aston Villas at the game. And then Sarr, really good play from Kulu, as I said, good play. He starts it off, plays the pass into Sarr. And I feel like Sarr's done what he's done on that right-hand side a couple of times this season, man. Like, he really, really, like, the guy is quality, man. And I'm not just talking about the cross. I'm talking about his endeavour, his runs, and his ability to actually ghost into that right-hand side and offer us something different. Like, he's our right number eight, but you see him so many times in games this season, really, really wide and trying to get into a position where he can feed others. You look at the goal that we scored against Brighton. When he scored it, he was in a similar situation, and where Kulusevski plays the key pass into him. Again, funnily enough, that time he goes for the cross, but the cross gets blocked. But then he's there to latch onto the rebound. This time around, obviously, he's a lot further out. But the cross he put in, my goodness, man. My word. Like, when you want to talk about 10 out of 10 cross, that is a 10 out of 10 cross. Like, we should not underestimate how difficult that cross was and how excellent that cross was. He's had to get that ball right on the money. Because Madison's not a big guy. He's a small player. He's a small player. Sarr has crossed this ball, yeah, and he's had to get it in between two Aston Villa centre-backs, right? Like, that ball has to be perfect so Maddison can just run onto that and prod that home. You have to make sure that it's so good that the player closest to in front of Maddison can't get it, right? And the player behind Maddison can't come and intercept it. So, yeah, man, fantastic cross from Sarr. I think that's what, like, his second or third assist for the season? I can't even remember. Two of them been to James Maddison, and really good goal, man. 1-0 up. I think we deserved it at that point, man. We were the better side.
Yeah, that ball, last time, we know about Sarr's endeavour, we know about his runs, but I think even Yao, not to dig him out, but he said in the main pod, like, it was a superb finish for Maddison, which I kind of disagree with. Like, I don't think it had to be. All he had to do was just hold his foot out, let the ball make contact with him, because it was that good of a cross. And that was all she wrote. And then, obviously, we got the second goal, which I think Yael said was a bad finish as well. I thought it was purposeful.
I didn't. I didn't get that. Sorry. I listened to the pod, and this one, Yael said it was bad. I don't agree. I don't agree. Martinez is a big goalkeeper. He's had to lift that just at the perfect height so Martinez can't get anything on it, right?
Do you think he low-key shinned it a bit, though?
He did. Listen, his
he shinned it a bit.
His intent. I'm not arguing with his intent. Whether he intended to do it or not, that's a different discussion. But the fact of the matter is, the actual finish itself, it was a good finish because he's roofed it, which meant Martinez had no chance of getting it. And I think that's what we needed.
Fortune favors a brave, mate. Fortune favors a brave. But I think the lead up is what I have to focus on, because Kulusevski wins the ball high up, which is one of the components of our game that we missed since the start of the season, when James Maddison just seemed to nick everything in the final third, and we were on goalkeepers left, right, and center. And I feel like that type of component to our game has to be front and center in our game plan every week. And Kulusevski's picked out Son, who's honestly, I needed to come on this week. As a centre forward, he's world class. As a centre forward, he's world class for me. Because as a finisher, I don't know many that are better. And what I'm seeing from his game now is him actually taking ownership, dropping into area, combining with play. And his timing of run, his passing ability is a lot better than it was before. And his decision-making is just fantastic. I've been watching him all season, and I'm like, we've literally prioritized having Pigeon up top because he scored a couple of goals over the only player at this moment in time at Tottenham Hotspur Football Club that even gets close to a world-class tag. And that's Son. I think he was absolutely incredible on the day. The whole second half was the Son show for me.
Yeah, he was really good in the second half. Really, really good in the second half, man. It's annoying as well because he had, not annoying, because he had a moment in the first half where we won the ball back really well. And he was in that position and Brennan was on the left-hand side. And I think he played the pass into Brennan, the right thing. I just think he didn't put enough weight on it. So it didn't make its way through the Aston Villa player, cut it out. But listen, man, we were talking about Son on the WhatsApp chat. And I was actually speaking to one of my friends about it today. Like, his centre forward play has been so impressive this season. Like, it's been so impressive. Like, I'm actually like I want to sort of say, yeah, the system's been good. Yeah, it allows Son to be a bit more fluid, et cetera, but no, I'm not just going to put it on system. I think this guy is mashing work. Like, he's mashing serious work in the central areas, man. Like, and it's not even just the pass in the final third. Like, he's coming short. He's coming short. Yep. He's linking play, one touch, two touch passing. Like, he's really been a revelation for Spurs through the middle when he plays. And to your point, yeah, Richarlison has scored goals. He's scored goals, so Andrew's put him there. But the levels, it's just different, man. It's actually just
different. It's gravy.
It's mad.
People talk about hold-up play, and, like, Richarlison is, like, considerably more physical than Son is supposed to be. But he can't do half of the stuff that he does. It's like the crispness is just different. It's like we see the Brazilian woodland pigeon, the pretty pigeon in the other part of London, get all these plaudits for build-up play and shit. And it's like, come on, man. Like, Son's already exceeded this dude, bro. Like, what is going on here? Like, gosh. Son needs his flowers, man, because he's in the twilight hour of his career, realistically. But I feel like he might have a career resurgence for the next two or three, because what he's doing at the moment is just so much more sustainable than just bursting off the final man and just running full tilt every time he gets the ball. So shout out to him, man. That's a real captain. That's a real captain.
Listen, I ain't gonna take the bait. I'm just gonna give Son his praise, but I want to shout out Brennan Johnson, man, because, like, we've given him a lot of stick, and I think rightly so, because his performances in a lot of games just hasn't been good enough. But what I've really liked about his performance, not just against Aston Villa, but against Palace, is just the intent and the endeavour as well. Like, don't overcomplicate your game. Keep things simple. Work hard. And when you have the ball, just be direct. Like, I felt like that was his theme against Aston Villa. Every single time he had the ball, he was looking to go at Matty Cash. Go at him. He's not good enough. Like, even if you aren't the most skillful player, you have got pace, you've got strength, and if you've got determination, you'll get past him. And we've seen in earlier games this season, right? In earlier games this season, I've seen Brennan Johnson scare the life out of fullbacks, and he's not really doing that much. It's just because he's actually, like, he's not a big guy, but, like, he's physically imposing at times on the pitch, and he's got blistering pace. Like, use that to your advantage, and actually go at guys. Honestly, go at guys. You get your reward. I thought he was fantastic against Aston Villa, and I thought he deserved his goal, man. He worked hard. He worked his socks off.
Well, he's our best left winger at the moment. Like I say, he's not just contributed against Aston Villa now. It's Brentford, Brighton, Palace. Now again, Villa, clutch. And I just remember thinking back to when he started left wing. He obviously started left wing at the Emirates and did pretty well. But when he started against Chelsea, it was just cooking Reece James for fun.
Mate,
that's scared the life out of him. He didn't have to do that much either. Just stick to the basics, which he does really well. Like, he doesn't do anything advanced. Obviously, he's not that great at that. But he's very tidy with all the basics. And really and truly, he hasn't let us down. Yeah, he just keeps on getting in really good positions, and he's been very useful, I've got to say.
He's getting over the BCM Brennan accusations.
Wait, who was calling him?
you know how it works. Off the time.
It was appropriate. It was appropriate. And Owen, you're cheeky for that, saying, oh, he hasn't let us down this season. What? Brother, what?
Huh?
What do you mean, when has he let us down this season? Bro, we've been watching the tapes, bro. We've been seeing these games. What are you talking about?
Has he actually let us down?
Yes.
Big chances, rude boy.
Yes, he has. There's been games where there was like a 10 or 11 game stretch where like he actually stunk, bro. Like I was like, yo, what the hell is this smell, bro? The smell was literally like traveling all the way up into the South Stand. Like that's how much he was stinking, bro. But props to him, man. I'm happy that he's in good form, because ultimately, if he's in good form, we are better for it. And you can see it's actually paying dividends now. He's scoring big goals. And most importantly, he's playing better. That's what I care about the most, right? If you're playing well, all of that stuff will come, right? I would much rather Brennan Johnson be playing well and scoring here or assisting here than, okay, yeah, you're scoring. You may have a little burst, but you're not actually playing that well. Like he scored against, I think it was Brighton. He scored the winner against Brighton. Great goal. I mean, great to get the late goal, but his cameo was terrible. He was absolutely awful. I would much rather prefer to see the Brennan Johnson we saw against Aston Villa and Crystal Palace, where, okay, you're making your contribution, but like you're actually playing well. And I can say, you know what? That gives me encouragement for what you can give us in the next game and the next game and the next game.
Fair enough. Some slightly unfair comments in there about that, but
it's not just me. It's not just me. The man done even said it as well.
But no, moving on to the last two goals, where good points were made about Son's captaincy. Great finish for the third. What I love.
You want to talk about the red card before the third? Because
Yeah, of course.
Can we talk about that? Yeah. Have you guys, I don't know if you guys have seen it yet on Twitter, but Aston Villa fans are spreading. So basically, McGinn, someone basically went for a ball. McGinn had the ball, right? They went for the ball. So obviously, I think they were late. They're actually trying to go for the ball. They were late and they've ended up basically kicking McGinn on the ankle. He's gone down, but the player who's done it has not even received a booking. And I'm seeing like two or three big Aston Villa accounts or some random Aston Villa fans say, oh, this is the exact same thing that happened against Spurs. Look at this. Not even a yellow card. It's a shambles. How did McGinn get sent off? So I need you, man, to please explain to these villains, because that's what they call themselves, villains, why John McGinn got sent off. Like, I don't know what they're talking about here.
Just simple two words. Cry more. Cry more, because the game was done, man. They weren't in the game anymore anyway. Like they weren't in the game.
I'm so glad that red card didn't decide the game.
Same. Yeah, this is it.
And even if it did, hold that.
Yeah.
No, I'm glad we made them retreat on their own patch. They actually set up to retreat before the first whistle went.
Facts.
We went 2-0 up in the first half and he lost his head as a captain, because he was, wasn't he the one that played the poor pass for the second goal that got closed down?
No, it was Konza. Konza was the one that played it. Konza was the one that played it. Tielemans got gegenpressed by Kulu and then we scored. Yeah. Yeah.
Damn.
It is what it is, man. It was a terrible challenge. Like, you could see what the intent was and it's just like, come on, man. Like, I know 100%. People say, oh, it wasn't dangerous, blah, 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 blah. But
yeah, fuck it, there comes
a time where if someone's not expecting that level of contact, that's where you see injuries come from. And
100%.
Like, it doesn't always have to be studs up. It doesn't always have to be a slide tackle. If you're not intending to play the ball, violent conduct comes into play, right? And as far as I'm concerned, that's what it factors in us. It just is 100%. What it is.
100. This you made a really good point on the pod where it's like he was like, he doesn't necessarily agree with players getting sent off for the whole, like, or the clash of heads thing where it's like, you're not really done much or the pushing. But like that one, there should be no argument, in my opinion, for that being a red card offense. Like, he's made no attempt to play the ball and the speed Destiny's going at, he's literally whacked him in the knee, bro. Like, the Destiny has the ball near his foot / ankle, and somehow your connection with the player is all the way up in his knee. Like, that is no intent to get the ball. That's malicious play. That's malicious play, and they can laugh and cry about, oh, sorry, they can cry about it all they like. That's dangerous play, and he got sent off, rightly so. And lo and behold, they've not appealed it. Why have they not appealed it? If it was, if it was such a nonsense red card, why have they not appealed it?
Yeah, it's mad. It's the most cynical thing, and I think Villa fans maybe feel like, because they got away with the cash one in the reverse fixture, which I actually think was a worse challenge. Obviously, McGinn's was very Sunday league, and then you've got Cash, who went higher on the leg, was just as cynical, if not more, and yet he only got booked and rightly got hooked at half time because you could see where that was going. And yeah, I'm just glad we got that decision in the end, because that's, for me, part justice for what Cash did in the reverse fixture. Not to harp on about it, but
let's speak on it, man. Let's speak on it, because Aston Villa, they were very chesty. Like, that whole 3-point lane thing, it really pissed me off, man. I can't lie. I saw that. I went on Twitter. I saw that after the game, and I was just like, what? You were literally outplayed for most of this game against Spurs' C-string side, and you scraped 3 points, and this is what you're saying. You're coming out like you're Billy Big Bollocks, man. Nah, man, they can hold that. And like Si said, I'm so happy that the game was basically dusted before his sending off, because now they can't say, oh no, they only beat us because, oh, we were down 7. No, nope. The game was 2-0 zip before he got sent off. 2-0.
I think my favorite part about the whole thing was the fact that we just stat patterned in added time. There was no reason for there to be like 8
minutes.
It's like, well, the game's done. Why are you just making these guys get their steps in? Like, what's the point? Like,
I've just got to say, I admire Tobes' commitment to just beefing every team in the league.
And all fronts, back in my all boy the time. As well, man. Hey, who's that Sheffield brother? Hold
Hold man.
Hold. He's mad as well. You just keep coming back. Spinning the block.
I'm just like, when you were replying to that tweet from like a year ago, I know you had that bookmarked there, just
bro, ready, bro. I just said, you know what? I literally checked it. I said, you know what? Bide your time. Like, that's my new mantra now. Like, I may be angry in the moment, but I also say to myself, be patient. Your time will come, man. Your time will come. There'll be something that I can use to just get a leg up. And once I've got that leg up, it's over for you. Yeah, you're finished.
You just aren't allowed to go back to Luton, though.
Bun Luton, man. The way we were speaking on Luton was mad. That was actually mad.
But anyway, I loved that fourth goal. Talking about our stat padding, obviously Son, as the captain, was celebrating that second goal very passionately. He got his own really good finish, and then that fourth goal where he put it on the plate for Werner and then pushed him to the crowd to celebrate with them and then celebrated in front of the Aston Villa fans. I was like, perfect. Perfect.
He celebrated
in front of the Aston Villa fans.
Son is a proper captain, I must say. And the play, Son is a proper captain. No, he is. He's a proper captain. He is. We had captains like Harry Kane who led by example, right? But I think Son does both. Son does the talking on the pitch and he leads by example off the pitch. Like, I feel like he's a good central figure to have in the dressing room. And you can see that when you see these guys play, whenever there's good moments, even when there's bad moments, there's total accountability with Son. Total accountability. And I think that's the most you can ask for in the captain. And I think even the bit of play for the fourth goal, bruv, he just said, you know what? I'm sourcing them now. Let me just source them real quick. Let me just get myself another cheeky assist. Yeah, let me get a cheeky assist. Bang, bang, man. Yeah, and then Kulusevski, they were cooking towards the end.
I think the fact of the matter is I've said this before and I'll say it again. There's not been a captain that I've felt really embodied the armband as much as Ledley King since, right? And Son, for me, is that guy. Son is a transcendent figure on and off the pitch. Like, whether people like to acknowledge it or not, he is one of the biggest names in football currently. Like, his region looks at him like David Beckham for a reason. He's that guy. And the stuff he's been doing this season has just actually brought my joy back for this team. Like the last couple of years, like I know that you twerked when Harry Kane broke the record and all of that stuff. And I know you've taken a selfie with the mural and all of that crap.
King right? Kane.
But King,
come on, Harry. Come on, Harry. Come on, Harry.
I'm going to be rooting for him to slap Arsenal's head, but that's a different conversation.
I was going to say.
Some makes me proud to like look at our club and be like, that's our captain. And just a great dude. Like he just comes across really genuine. You can see him like usher players who have been struggling towards the fans on away days and like really like gassing them up. And
what he did with Vicario as well. I almost forgot.
Yeah.
So he sustained that head injury and was obviously having a go at him, almost telling him to just come off the pitch. Like he took a couple of studs to the back of the head from Zaniolo, I think it was.
Yeah.
And quite clearly you could see there was a little bit of a wound there. Physio's obviously giving him a bit of treatment. And yeah, he's just basically like shunting him, like, get off, go off. Now we can use a concussion sub, it's no big deal. We already 4-0 up at that point as well, or like was it?
No, that was, I think we were 2-0 up. It was 2-0 up when that happened.
Okay.
Yeah.
Even so, still great captaincy. It's just another example.
He's a human. He's like he's a modern captain for me, and I will hearken on about this. I'm so glad we're past the whole the captain has to be the guy that just shouts at everyone. It's like, no, give me emotionally intelligent leadership. Right, emotionally intelligent leadership all day, every day over all of that old school bollocks. I don't want to see it anymore.
Why is this the first time I've heard Unai Emery called Loki?
that's top. That is top. That's the problem right there. I've heard him be called a vampire. I've never heard him be called Loki.
Oh gosh, that's so fitting. Leader of the TAV, right?
Oh Lord. TVA, TVA, yeah.
TVA. Yeah, I know, but Aston Villa, AV, you know. See,
whatever. I was too slow. I was there. Put my head up. Oh my God!
Shame.
You know, when you don't catch all the size like quick-witted puns or takes, it's just like, oh man, damn! I've really just made a fool out of myself from this point. Before we move on, though, the points we've made about Son, like I just want to have a conversation, because in the summer when he was made captain, I think most of us were pretty happy that he got the captaincy, but I felt like there was a lot of resistance from the Spurs fan base as to why he shouldn't be captain. And I don't know what was looking back at it now in hindsight, like what's your opinions on that? Because it was mad to me then. And what, pardon?
Of who shouldn't be captain?
Son. When he got made captain, there was a lot of resistance and question as to why he was selected as a captain. And I think for me, it was like the standout choice. I didn't really see why he shouldn't have been the captain. So I just wanted to bring it up. It was just a bit, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, gosh, I'll end up being that guy. But I think there's just stigmas about certain players from certain places, man. Like, I'll be honest. I'll be totally honest about it. It's like we can love Son as much as we want, but we know that like there's a little bit of like a sometimes an ill feeling that like let me frame it this way. A lot of the time, a lot of our fan base get classified as Son fans as opposed to Tottenham Hotspur fans. They're othered a lot of the time, and I think Son gets that treatment too. He still gets abused by opposition fans at a unnecessary clip. Teams just seem to like pinpoint him as annoying and all of this stuff when he's not really done anything. And I just think our fan base sometimes internalizes some of that stuff and feeds back into it. And for me, Son always made the most sense, because the fact of the matter is Son is one of the longest tenured players at the club. Son is one of the most successful players at the club, both internationally and club. Son is ultimately one of the most liked players in world football. And ultimately, he has the most credentials just from top to bottom. if you look at someone like Romero, Romero's had more bad patches of form. Maddison is brand new to the club. There is no other option, realistically. And Son has been the spiritual leader of Tottenham Hotspur Football Club for at least the last 4 or 5 years. So, yeah, man, I think there's a little bit of nepotism and unconscious bias, I think, that comes along with that stuff.
The nepotism is very potent because it's probably more of a crime that there wasn't more of a call for him to be part of the leadership groups of previous years. Like the previous years, it was he Højbjerg, Kane, Lloris, where Son, who, I mean, we've seen how he's performed in big games for us, for one, and two, we've seen his performances for South Korea, how he's dragged them to the, I think it was the Asia Trophy. I got confused between that and the Asia Cup in the winter, but he dragged them to that trophy that they ultimately won, and you just see how he is as a likable guy as well. So it was the most obvious choice. Like, I think my only pushback for this new leadership group was Maddison because he was new. But other than that, I think that was a good choice. Was he given hindsight? And yeah, I don't even remember there being pushback for.
Yeah, there was. There was resistance. There was definite resistance. I think under points as to why he was the obvious choice as well.
If people just want Højbjerg as captain or something. I'm not even saying that to dig him out, but people see him as that.
Probably. I can't remember who they wanted. I just think there was a lot of people saying, why Son? I guess it's more so because of the season that he had previously as well. I think that left a lot like a nasty taste in people's mouths. But ultimately, I know... I'm not going to say pause, so no, right? But I think another thing that needs to be taken into consideration with the Son decision was the fact that this is a guy who genuinely loves the club. He's loyal. He had an opportunity to leave the club. He did not leave.
He signed contracts when Nuno came in.
Bro, I will always, no matter how frustrated I am with Son, I will always love and respect Son at a club. For stuff like that, because players in the past have left when they've had that opportunity. He did not leave. He signed and then went on to give us one of the best seasons that we've seen from him in a Spurs shirt as well. So for me, he'll always have the respect there. And I feel like he's the benchmark. When new players come to the club, he's the benchmark of what you want to see from our players.
Develop into. Yeah, 100%. And the last point on the Son captaincy is I will always choose a man that's military trained over a man that will sacrifice his kids every single time. Every single
time. You bang this up, bro. You bang this up.
Well, on that, so moving on to Fulham, and I think Ange said in his press conference that Dragusin would be starting. And I kind of wanted to judge him, obviously, once he started getting more minutes and against 11 men. But before we just quickly preview that, what did you guys make of his cameo?
I wasn't as impressed as everybody else, man. I thought he was loose in possession.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought he was good.
I do. I think there was a moment where he gave the ball away and we managed to not concede, but I was like, you got to be a little bit more on your toes. I think it's difficult coming on in second half of a game, so we'll give him some bail, but ultimately, like, it was an okay cameo. It was an okay cameo for me. Just okay.
And so, you thought he was good. Are you feeling safe with him starting against Fulham?
I mean, we have no choice. I would feel, I guess I have to feel safe with him. But I thought he looked good, man. I thought he looked good. I respected the fact that he didn't just come on and just leave it down to, oh, yeah, I'm going to do my defensive work. I liked the fact that he wanted to try and take some responsibility in possession, even if all of the passes weren't successful. He looked good. So, yeah, man. I get it. It's crumbs. And eventually, obviously, they went down to 10 men. But yeah, man, I need to latch onto something to give me encouragement in his performances to come against Fulham. And whichever games that he'll play. So yeah,
can't just get by looking like Jason Momoa.
Like, he looks like a pastier Jason Momoa.
Apparently, he's been really stringent in his training as well. Like, he's been training really, really well. He analyzes his training and his performances for hours in his spare time. So, I like hearing about that from him as a character. And I think even an okay performance is a good foundation to build on. Because I looked at him and it looked a little bit... what's an unpause-worthy word? Fuck it. He did look a bit stiff on the ball. some of his ball retention, like he was very right foot heavy. Maybe he's just more comfortable out on the right, but
yeah,
with Aston Villa going down to 10 men, yes, did they throw on all of their attacking players and their flair players? Also, yes. So I do hold a decent bit of weight where he was able to be confident against the likes of Bailey, Watkins, Zaniolo, even though I think he's a bit dead, and Diaby, who I think is electric, to be fair. So, yeah, I think it's a good foundation to build on. I don't think Fulham have particularly potent attackers. They've got good ball retainers, but yeah, they've got an informed striker in Muniz who could cause some problems, but I think he's got a good foundation to build on, to be fair.
Yeah, I feel like the game on Saturday probably suits Dragushin and Romero, because like that Muniz guy, he looks like he wants to tussle, man. Like, he's a physically imposing presence, right? And I feel like we're probably going to need to go machine for machine to try and keep a guy like that at bay, but just not be too overzealous, right? So I'm intrigued, man. It's one of those games where, like, I want to say we should go and win, right? When we have a fully fit, close to fully fit team available. But Fulham are just a weird side in a sense where they can really, like, pluck these performances randomly. So, it's going to be an interesting game. It's going to be an interesting game. I think we got... Again, it's another game where I got payback on my mind, because it's like, not, I don't dislike Fulham or anything about that. It's just more the fact that they obviously knocked us out of the League Cup as well. And on the balance of play, I think they probably deserve to knock us out in the League Cup. We didn't play well. But yeah, man, we need to try and get it back in blood, man. Get it back in blood and try and get back to winning ways at Craven Cottage.
Yeah, you're right. Fulham are a weird side. And I mean, I'll put their win in the League Cup down a lot to Fraser forced attacks. And with Fulham, it's weird because on paper, they look like they should be in the relegation zone, like flat out, especially with Jimenez injured at the moment. And credit to their manager, to be fair, they've managed to set themselves up in a way where they're just very hard to beat. And they actually maintain a bit of a goal threat and manage games well. Like, that win at Old Trafford was actually quite impressive. I think they're getting a few more players back as well, especially in the Iwobi. Yeah. But I still expect us to win. I think it'll be a 1-0, though, just like it was in the reverse fixture last year. I think it was Kane scored from the edge of the box. Just wrapped it in what was just a very, very tight game.
It was a terrible game. Terrible game. We were so bad. So bad. We were so bad in that game. I think we're going to concede, to be honest. And I don't really want that to be the case, but I think we're going to concede. However, I also think we're going to win. I think I'm going to go for a 2-1. I think Son's going to score again. And I think I'm going to go for Kulusevski to score. Right. I feel like he's due a goal. So... I think we're going to win that game 2-1. But just on your point on Fulham, I actually do think they've got a decent squad relative to what they're aiming for. Like, they're a mid-table team. I don't see them as anything more than a mid-table team. So, like, 10th, 11th, 12th place finishing side. I think they've got a squad that befits that position in the league table. And I think in the defence, I think they got a few decent players as well. But, yeah, man... man for man, we should be winning this game of football. So, yeah, I'm still going to stick to my 2-1 prediction.
I think there's been rumors that like Maddison might have a knock. We know Van der Ven's out. Udogie, hopefully he's all right after that McGinn challenge. Other than that, yeah. Si, how are you feeling going into Fulham away?
Yeah, funnily enough, the chat is drinking from Si Stradamus fountain today, because 3-1 is what I'm feeling. Because I don't know, Fulham is one of those grounds. It's small pitch, traditional world, rickety old stadium. We can't go there and like do the Rick James fuck your couch type of thing, because there's no furniture in that place. But I definitely think we just ransack it anyway and just have a bit of a jolly up and leave there with 3 points. Scorers, I want to see Sun score every week because the celebration is dope. that's pretty much it.
Oh, but very cool.
Just think, I've got a feeling that Werner's going to pop up with another goal.
I'll take it.
Pigeon might be back as well. And you know, Pigeon just scores dusty goals. So,
yeah. Wait, on that point on Werner, when is it we have? Because I saw recently we actually have a shorter deadline to make the move permanent than I thought. Yeah. I think it's like next month or something. What cost would you want Werner to score against Fulham? Because if he does and he keeps on contributing, then we're going to be forced to make a decision early. And I think it's leading towards a certain way.
I don't think so, you know.
Just ask Tobes when he's given Ash the £50.
He's gonna give me the 50 quid.
You gotta taste reality once in a while, brother. And Werner is gonna get signed. Like,
no,
we know how this plans out, man.
Please, God, no.
All I'm saying is, for me, I would take Werner if it means that Solomon never returns to the manor.
Ooh.
You know what? Fair enough, man. Fair enough. I was speaking about him today in the touchline FC chat, and I'm not gonna say what I want to say.
I can't say what I want
to
say.
But someone must have asked, "Oh, like, what happened to Solomon? Where's he been?" And my response was, like, it didn't even answer anything to do with the injury and stuff. I just said he's a getting gone. So I'm just gonna let you, man, just use your imagination to think.
And
of
if
what
you are it. Imagining a Kanye yeah. West meme, you might not be missing.
All right, man. All right, get that guy gone.
But yeah, we gotta post that one.
Get that guy gone. I'll send it to you. I'll send you what I sent, what I put in our info chat. But get that guy gone. And I'm sorry, I do not want to see Werner step foot in that ground as a permanent employee of Spurs. I just can't. And to your point, Owen, the balance. I want him to score against Fulham. I want him to score as many goals as possible. But what I think is going to happen is, yes, he could score against Fulham, but when we start playing these tougher games, I don't think he's going to be as impactful in terms of goal scoring. I think he might be, and I'm hoping he will be impactful in general in terms of bringing him off the bench and stretching teams and getting assists and stuff. But I think I don't see Werner going on this mad flurry of goals. I just don't. But that being said, I can see him coming off the bench to do a little something against Fulham.
I take it you don't want him signed permanently, Si, Werner. In general,
as a rotation option, I don't care. As long as it means that that other you isn't ever at Tottenham Hotspur Football Club again, I am fine, because I cannot see another propaganda post from him or the football club in support of him. I want him gone. I don't ever want to see that guy in our club again. He's a waste man. He can suck his mum. Yeah, can bleep that out if you want to, or you can keep it there and everyone can clip it and send it to him. I've got a song specifically for him that I'll save for the group chat. But yeah, he's waste. Werner's not great, but as an option, why not? Why not?
I can see Werner cooking in Europe, you know.
But just not, I, With the reports that Richarlison could potentially be going to Saudi, it's like one bum for another bum, man. Like, it is what it is. It's fine.
Fair. I was going to wrap the pod up on the Fulham predictions, and we've made them now, but there's been a pretty prominent topic on the timeline recently, and it's this. There's a comment posted in my underscore ghost.88. Madison or Odegaard? I'm just going to say what I said at the start of the season. I still think Odegaard edges Madison. But there's not much in it. I don't think either one is clear of each other, but I wanted to get your takes on it.
Yeah, I don't think... I agree with the last part that I don't think either one is clear of each other. And I think in most cases, it's a preference thing, right? Because I think when you look at what both players do, they're doing things at a fairly similar clip, right? In terms of the close control, the passing, the dribbling at times, goal scoring, assists, creativity, like they're just both like supreme playmakers in my opinion. But the reason why I'm going to edge with Madison is because I feel like Madison is more likely to win me a game of football than Odegaard whilst offering the build-up stuff that Odegaard can offer. So what I mean by that is I feel like Madison plays with a little bit more brute force in the final third. Like he will punch that pass into the runner and get that big chance created. And I'm not saying Odegaard can't do it. I'm saying I feel like Madison will look for that pass more. And then I think it's fine margins again, but I think Madison's got a better weak foot. Like, I don't really think you can, like, in basketball terms, I don't think you can guard James Maddison. When he's rampant, I don't think you can. I don't think there's a plan to keep a lid on him because I feel like he can hurt you with both feet. And I've seen that in his shooting and his passing, right? I feel like with Odegaard, he's extremely wedded to his strongest foot, which is his left foot. If you try and put him in a position where he can't use his left foot, I think he struggles. And I don't think you can say that for James Maddison. I think he's very comfortable making passes and taking shots with his left foot versus his right. So like I said, fine margins, but me, I'm picking James Maddison.
It's an interesting question. I've never considered it. And I would say that in normal circumstances, Odegaard would be the profile that I'd more gravitate towards because I don't care as much as about like the statistical output in terms of goals and assists. But what I will say that favours Madison at this moment in time, in terms of my preference, is Madison can fit more styles of football. I think that's been shown already over his career, whereas I feel like Odegaard is in the perfect situation in terms of stylistic fit. And I think there's only maybe two other clubs that he could go to in world football and be successful at this point or produce at the same level. And that would maybe be like Man City, possibly somewhere like Barca, who play that style of football where it's very possession-based, very technical and very like just ball retention and all of that good stuff. And he would be able to shine on that type of platform a little bit more than Madison. But Madison is a jack of all trades, master of a few too. So yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, that'll wrap up this pod. Thank you guys for joining me. And thank you to all the viewers at the moment. It's saying over 400 concurrent viewers. So yeah, fair play for spending your Friday night with us. We enjoy spending it with you. Check out our socials. We've got New Spurs Order at TikTok, on the TikTok, on Instagram, on X/Twitter. Yeah, look out for the audio version, which is posted every Saturday morning. But for now, peace out and common you Spurs once again.
Peace.
This has opened up for Madison! A thing of beauty! Watson.
Sports Social Podcast Network.